Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. His books include How Much Are You Making on the War Daddy? A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration, Lessons from Iraq, Avoiding the Next War, and Prophets of War, that's P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S, of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Hartung.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And the military budget, the GOP-led House panel has blocked the Pentagon's budget cuts, and it's okayed larger military pay rises, but the budget now goes to the full House. They'll be voting on it pretty soon, won't they?
Yes. They have to decide which amendments in order, and then middle of the week, it'll be on the House floor.
So Representative Buck McKeon, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, of course, is something like a prince of pork, is he not? I mean, you have to go back a way to find somebody that's been that aggressive in wanting to just throw money at the Pentagon.
Yes. McKeon's sort of like a one-man military-industrial complex. I mean, you know, they build stealth fighters in his district. They build drones in his district. He runs the Armed Services Committee. He's the biggest recipient of campaign donations from the weapons industry. So he's probably, you know, pretty much the most consistent proponent of all things weapons contractor that I can think of.
And he's about to retire, though, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And his likely successor, Mac Thornberry from Texas, is also probably has a lot of the same positions that McKeon has. I don't know if he's quite as effective at, twisting arms to get what he wants, but I don't expect a major shift.
So is this just a part of this, endless dance that goes on over the decades where the Pentagon suggests its budget and then the House ladles on the pork based upon contracts in their district? I mean, the classic case, of course, was the C-130 Hercules transport plane built so many of those damn things that John McCain once complained that they ought to, you know, give them out to high schools.
Yes, it's the same process. It's a strange year because they actually have a budget cap, so they have to steal from somewhere else in the Pentagon budget to fund their pet projects. But what they're doing is they're taking it out of what they call readiness, you know, training, spare parts, things that might actually be relevant to troops. And they're just spending it on weapon systems that may or may not ever be used, have huge cost overruns, happen to be located at the local military base and so forth. But what they're hoping to do is break through those caps and get back to the good old days where you could just add and add and add. And that issue will be fought out the rest of this year and probably early next year.
But did President Obama and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel open up a can of worms? I mean, their 2015 Pentagon budget are within the caps established by law, but aren't there a couple of openings there? The Opportunity Growth and Security Initiative, about $26 billion wish list, and then you've got the Pentagon's Overseas Contingency Operations Account, the OCO, and that can be gamed as well. So is that what's happening here, that they're looking for the low-hanging fruit and they're going to just pile it on?
That's their hope. I mean, even Obama, Paul Ryan signed off on the caps, but I think they have great hopes that either this Opportunity Growth Security Initiative or by stealing from the Overseas Contingency Operations Fund that they'll get money above the cap. So it is a bit of a shell game, and I think especially the war budget will be interesting because they have a placeholder in there. They don't know what's going to happen in Afghanistan. But last year they cut troops by 39%, and they actually increased the war budget. So they're clearly putting a lot of things in there, pet projects that they can't fit in the regular Pentagon budget.
So that means that the Overseas Contingency Operation budget for fiscal year 2014 was at least $20 billion more than what was needed to pay for genuine war-related activities.
Yes, as far as we can tell, at least $20 billion, and you know, they're so poor at reporting this stuff in detail that it could even be more than that.
So what kind of leeway or clout does Chuck Hagel have? You know, you recall that there was an unprecedented amount of opposition to him being the Secretary of Defense, even though he came out of the Senate as a Republican. He still got a lot of grief. A lot of it was coming from the Israel lobby. But where does he stand in terms of being a Secretary of Defense? He's supposedly more in line with helping the boys and not providing the toys, which is normally, and you just said that they're going to sacrifice the boys for the toys, which is what they do. So how would you rate him and his clout?
Well, I think it's limited. I mean, you know, he works for Obama. Obama hasn't really been a profile in courage and taking on Congress in recent years. I think, you know, the thing I like about Hagel is he's not quite as extreme in his rhetoric as Leon Panetta was. I mean, according to Panetta, the force was going to be devastated, we were going to be defenseless, and, you know, in a dangerous world and so forth. Hagel's a little more measured in his description of this, which I think at least doesn't quite have the effect of whipping up the kind of fear that other kind of rhetoric can do. So, but in terms of his, you know, his political strength, I think it's maybe not as weak as you would have thought it would be based on his performance in his confirmation hearings, but, you know, probably less than Gates had. I think Gates had more room to maneuver because he was at least in name a Republican.
So, but clearly the House Armed Services Committee they're leaving alone the worst programs in the history of the world. Isn't the F-35 the most expensive program in the history of the world, and it's left untouched? Even though it's an overpriced and underperforming aircraft.
Well, if they get to build everything they'd like, it'll be the most expensive weapons program ever undertaken, and not just the close to $400 billion for buying the things, but also the trillion or more to operate them once they're in the force. And, you know, they've doubled in price per aircraft. They've had cracks in the wings. They've had difficulty landing on aircraft carriers, which is one of their missions. The vertical takeoff and landing version for the Marines that was suspended a couple of years ago because it had so many problems. They've got this high-tech helmet for the pilot that's supposed to sort of be his eyes and ears, and that's been malfunctioning. So, you know, it's been one disaster after another, but the spin, you know, the spin control folks are in full gear. They full bore going ahead. They managed to place a puff piece on 60 Minutes about it, and they're claiming that they're going to bring the cost down. And so it's kind of this, it's in this public relations battle period where they're trying to, you know, put lipstick on a pig, so to speak.
But how do they manage to do that, though, when something that's so manifestly unwieldy, unworkable, and underperforms, and it's overpriced? I mean, what they did with that program was they tried to make an aircraft fit all. They wanted it for, it's supposedly going to be for the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marines, and doing all of the above, vertical takeoff, bombing, fighter, the whole thing in this one, and being stealth. And stealth itself is something of a ripoff, isn't it? I mean, it's, first of all, the Russians have the radar that can basically paint these aircraft nowadays, and because of stealth, they have to be run by computers, and they don't, you know, they as far as I know, none of these, including the Raptor, the other one that preceded the F-35, none of them perform as well as the F-15 or the F-16.
I think that's right. You know, they've piled on all these technological goodies, and a lot of them are malfunctioning, don't perform as advertised, make the aircraft more fragile. I mean, it's got to be in the hangar more, you know, relative to how long it can actually be serving, you know, in the force. So, you know, I think the reason it's hanging in there, part of it's pork barrel politics, although even that it's not as good at distributing pork as some other aircrafts because they're doing so much in the production overseas. And then, I think certainly the average person doesn't realize what a disaster it is because it doesn't get major coverage in the mainstream press. And some of the things they have seen, like the 60 Minutes piece, basically 60 Minutes only interviewed people at Lockheed, well, really in the military, the Air Force guy who runs the program, basically said, his line was, well, we've had problems in the past, I'm going to fix them, you know, case closed. And then they let them take photos of the aircraft, put on the fun helmet and everything, and it was really almost like an advertisement for the plane. I mean, they did mention that it costs a lot of money, but they made it sound like, you know, all these technological wonders were going to, come to pass.
Well, that's the part of it that I find kind of mystifying, the idea that the most expensive weapon system in history could be a complete turkey, yet it has a life of its own. Nobody can stop it. Now the press is in the bag with 60 Minutes. Where is the impetus coming from to keep this boondoggle alive?
Well, it's a huge deal for Lockheed Martin because not only would they dominate the U.S. fighter market, but also the U.K. and Australia, Canada. And they've got 8 partner nations in on the ground floor. They're talking about Israel, Japan, South Korea. So, you know, if they can keep this thing going and they can, you know, convince all these countries to buy into this thing, they are the global fighter manufacturer for, you know, a generation or more to come. So it's clear for them, they're going to lobby with every tool available to keep this thing going. And then the Air Force is enamored of it, partly because they like high tech, no matter how, you know, almost the word high tech, even if it doesn't deliver the goods. And, of course, the bias towards fighter pilots, and, you know, they're the ones who are courageous. They're the ones who, you know, move their way up the ranks and so forth. So I think that kind of ideology of the top gun is still hanging around. And for the Air Force, it's a big chunk of change. And, you know, the more you have in your bureaucracy, the better, even though, you know, the money could be easily spent on other things.
Well, what's your sense then of if the public are allowing this for whatever reason, apathy or indifference or lack of information, allowing themselves to be ripped off to the tune of billions and billions of dollars, how do you get a debate going in terms of the overall level of the U.S. defense budget? The Pentagon's budget is more than the next 12 countries in the world combined, and it's 4 times of what China is spending and 8 times what Russia is spending. And clearly, we are not getting our money's worth, at least on the biggest ticket item of all, which is the F-35. Where is the debate here?
Well, there's a debate in Washington. You know, there's a kind of a group of nonprofits and some national peace groups like Peace Action and American Friends Service Committee and so forth. It's just that they're, they're relatively small compared to who they're up against. I mean, you know, the peace groups that I'm aware of in Washington might have a handful of lobbyists who actually can go up to the Hill and do real lobbying, and the weapons industry has close to 1,000. So I think, you know, actually they're doing quite well relative to the resources they have, but it certainly hasn't caught fire in the popular imagination in the way that maybe something like the $600 toilet seat did in the Reagan years or, some other systems in the past. I think, you know, the top line of the Pentagon budget has come down a little bit the last few years because of the gridlock between the Tea Party and within the Republican Party and then with the Democrats, because they've cut the Pentagon at the same time that they've cut domestic programs. And that's really, a lot of that has to do with the libertarians who are willing to cut both sides of government, and it puts the Republicans in this divided position. But it's not clear how long that's going to persist. You know, the Republican establishment is trying to strike back and get rid of some of these pesky libertarians, many of whom, of course, their domestic policies would be disastrous for the country if they were implemented. So it's a kind of complicated, difficult business. But nonetheless, I do think, you know, if the budget continues to be of concern to people because they're not extending unemployment, because people can't get, basic services, students can't afford their loans, don't have jobs when they get out of college, I think it would be possible to focus people on this idea that, why on earth are we wasting these billions and billions of dollars when we've got so many other needs? But, I think we're not there at the moment,
Well, but what we know about the country's mood, William Hartung, is that the country's fed up with wars. There's tremendous fatigue and buyer's remorse from the Bush and Cheney administration, who conned us into a war, which a lot of people drank the Kool-Aid in the Iraq War. And the Afghan war is an equal disaster. Obama wasn't able to get involved in Syria, I think in large part because the American people signaled very loud and clear that they don't want another war. So this is what's strange to me. You have kind of an anti-war mood in the country that we've been overextended, we've wasted money, wasted lives and treasure on futile expeditions. So let's, retrench here. And yet it's, the anti-war mood in the country is not translated into cutting the budget.
It hasn't yet. There is, depending how you ask the question, you can get a majority of people to say we're spending too much on the Pentagon. But will they take the next step of writing Congress, writing a letter to the editor, getting their colleagues agitated, talking to their organizations about it? That level of interest is not present at the moment. I have some hope that if we're going to have to slug it out over whether they can put unnecessary items in the war budget, maybe that will help just focus attention on kind of the shenanigans in Washington around the defense budget. And, maybe we can get the kind of attention that is merited to some of these disastrous programs.
So we'll be seeing that in the next few days, right? They'll be selling pork, and in the name of what? What threats are they going to sell?
There's always China. That's really there. And even though the Ukraine, there's no possibility in the world that the United States would take military action there. That's sort of something to just throw out there. That they're, they've got to find any enemy they can get their hands on. But it's all kind of in the abstract. I mean, it's not like when we had people dying in Iraq and still dying in Afghanistan. So it's, I think that's the question, that these parts of the budget that are not sort of directly related to, war itself, can we get the kind of focus on those that people now have great resistance to the notion of going to war again?
Well, William Hartung, I thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. His books include How Much Are You Making on the War Daddy? A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration, Lessons from Iraq, Avoiding the Next War, and Profits of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.